What's up, Darren?
What up?
What are you drinking?
Liquid IV.
Oh, electrolytes. How's that make
Yeah.
you feel?
Make me feel like I'm doing cocaine, but I've never done cocaine before. For the record. For the
I'll clap my
record. Clap
hands.
my hands in the heaven.
I can't find that clip and it's annoying me. But everybody, welcome to the Colorado Show, the most serious news show in the Centennial State.
Shout out to all you political pimps, players, hustlers, and hoes.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not the most serious. It's that we treat it with the level of respect it deserves. But we do have a little bit more of a serious substance today. We're going to talk about Tina Peters. We're going to talk about this Patrick Byrne thing. We're talking about Harmeet announcing investigations into Colorado prisons. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on
What's
here.
going on?
And
Hold on. What happened to the prison? Somebody die?
well, they said, she says, we should jump ahead. I don't know if
No,
we should
let's start
jump
with
ahead.
that. That sounds interesting.
I'm going to start with the prisons. All
Yeah.
right. Well, before we start with the prisons, let's hear from a couple of our sponsors and we'll be right back.
The wait is finally over. My towels are back in stock, but not for long. Get a six-piece My Towel set, regular $69.98, now only $39.98. Towels that actually work. What a concept. And that's not all. Check out our MyPillow bed sheets, only $29.88. Any color, any style, any size, even kings. Regular $119.98, now only $29.88. And how about our limited edition premium MyPillows, made with Giza cotton and a designer gusset, made exclusively for you to thank you for all your support. Queens $17.98. King's only $19.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get my towels for $39.98, MyPillow bed sheets only $29.88, and our limited edition MyPillow Queens $17.98 and King's only $19.98. Quantities won't last long, so order now.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually. And keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and Ira. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
And we're back.
Yes, 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 we are.
I think Karen is going to join us at some point, too. She has a lot to say about some of these stories as well.
What part of the forest is she broadcasting from today?
No, it could be forest, could be from inside car, could be, you know, I don't know. You never know what you're gonna get. It's part of the joy of Karen.
Yeah.
All right. So you want to start with the prison story?
Somebody said incoming raid. Uh oh. Uh oh.
Let's go.
Uh oh.
Nice. Love to see it. That might be the Badlands audience coming over. So if it is, what's up, guys? Good to see you. All right, let me pull up this letter from the U.S. DOJ Civil Rights Division. It says, Dear Governor Polis, I write to inform you that the United States Department of Justice is commencing an investigation of the 21 Colorado Department of Corrections facilities and the 12 residential youth centers operated by Colorado's Department of Human Services, Department of Youth Services. The department will conduct this investigation under the Civil Rights Institutionalized Persons, Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons, the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act of 1994, the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000. And this official notice is required by statute. There she is.
Uh-oh. Karen Kennedy. Oh, what's up, Karen?
We're starting with the prison question, and then we're going to get into the various Tina Peters stories and the Patrick Byrne story.
Fantastic. Right. I responded to that yesterday. That's very interesting. Please go on.
Hey, Karen, lovely to see you broadcasting from your Vail mansion.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Isn't it lovely?
Darren just lost the bet because he thought you were going to be in the forest.
Oh no! Mm-hmm.
Like Mowgli from the Jungle Book.
Yeah.
No. I'm in the down the street. My Vail condo.
Vail condo. Oh, I'm sorry. Ew. Does it have a hot tub?
No. That's for the rich people. I'm on the other side where the.
With the granola eaters.
Ski and snowboard instructors live.
Right.
Poor.
What?
All right. During these investigations, the department will determine whether the Colorado engages in a pattern of practice of violating the constitutional rights of prisoners held at the Department of Correction facilities by failing to provide adequate medical care and safe and sanitary physical conditions of confinement, and whether Colorado violates the rights of detainees by failing to protect youth in DYS facilities from use of excessive force and failing to provide adequate nutrition to detainees. The department will also consider whether Colorado violates prisoners and detainees' right to free exercise of religion by housing biological males and units designed for females. It's weird that they would put that under religion.
Well, no, I get it. That makes sense.
Does it?
Yeah, because you don't know what's going to happen as far as fornication is concerned and all that.
But religion.
Yeah.
I understand why it's a civil rights violation. It's just the religious aspect of it is weird to me. We have not reached any conclusions about the subject matter of the investigation. During the investigation, we will consider all relevant information, including the efforts of Colorado has taken to ensure compliance with the Constitution. We encourage the state to cooperate with our investigation and assure you that we will seek to minimize any potential disruption to our investigation, any potential disruption our investigation may have on Department of Corrections and Department of Youth Services operations. If we ultimately determine that there are no constitutional violations present at these facilities, we will notify you that we are closing the investigation. If we determine there are systemic violations, we will inform you of our findings and attempt to work with the state to remedy those violations. In our many years of civil rights enforcement, the good faith efforts of jurisdictions to work with us have routinely enabled us to resolve our claims without resorting to contested litigation. Attorneys from Civil Rights Division will be handling this investigation, and they will contact your office to discuss the next steps.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. CC Phil Weiser at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. This is delicious. I replied to Ms. Harmy with a lovely article. I don't know if you remember, look, I'm not going to go into it, but it was a strange encounter that I had with somebody who had been in that system, who was featured in a very popular article that went viral during the time. And he revealed to me about abuse in that system in the Department of Corrections. And I sent the article to Harmeet, and also some of the information concerning the expenditures and prison statistics during the pandemic. There were a lot of abuses during the pandemic, and that was what this article, which was a separate document, was referring to. This individual was interviewed by the Colorado Sun at the time, and it was shared with different media outlets and other media outlets referenced it, but he was kept in solitary for 23 hours a day. The quarantines were horrific. People were treated horribly. They were not allowed sunlight. He was denied mental health treatment, forced to take shots. It's it was a pretty interesting article with witness accounts. So they're going to have to answer for some things they've been doing in the prison system. Just saying. Let's start there. If that's how we get Tina Peters where she needs to be, fine.
So my initial instinct was that this complaint, this investigation was spawned from a complaint, and that the complaint was the Peter Tichtin letter that was sent to the president on Saturday, December 6th. And it was, you know, revealed to all of us on Monday that had happened. There's a number of assertions about the situation, Department of Corrections, in that in that letter. And I was thinking, okay, well, that sparked the investigation. But then they come in with the Department of Youth Services. And I wonder if there were other complaints about the... Are there multiple complaints
that
is beyond the Pueblo prison, you know?
Yeah, I am absolutely assuming there are. No, I know somebody who worked for the youth prison and he left. He could not, he's ex-military and he saw the abuse. So
I can't imagine, Colorado prisons being like Oz, you know?
Oh yeah. They're pretty rough.
What?
It was a hardened, like, military, ex-military, like, could work for Secret Service pretty squared away,
right,
dude.
Right.
And he couldn't handle it. So
I don't know. I picture, like,
interesting.
I picture, like, you know,
like white rainbows and unicorns.
Yeah, like granola, you know,
fluffy clouds,
yeah, right?
Flush. And, yeah. Like it was designed by a gay, right? Like you have, like nice kind of, we're chilling because, you know,
too sexy for the
gay, but,
too sexy for not myself. The case.
Yeah, not the case. No. I remember when different Coloradans were sending letters to Congress people about the treatment of J6ers and how J6ers were, you know, being kept in solitary and not getting food and medical treatment and, you know, not having their rights, upheld prior to conviction. And Colorado Congress people, I remember Ken Buck specifically, who is not a congressperson anymore, but was mine, and big old disappointment. I remember them talking about, listen, prison isn't supposed to be nice. It's not supposed to be, you know, it's, however, the left's criminal justice reform movement acknowledges that prison is a horrible, no good, very bad place, and says we need to, you know, help some of the worst people among us, the people that rape kids. Well, they might've been raped too when they were kids. And so we have to just let them keep on going and perpetuate the cycle, let them out, you know, limited justice interventions because, you know, they're hurt people. And we just need to be more empathetic towards pedophiles. Also, Tina Peters needs to be locked up for 9 years for lying to Jenna Griswold. Totally asymmetrical.
I think like, as far as like this reform thing, it's kind of weird. I sat and I talked with somebody one time about, because they believed in prison reform and, you know, and lenient sentencing and things like that. And they're like, well, if you just let them out, eventually they'll grow out of it. It's like, yeah. I was like, oh, okay. I said, how'd that work out in states like Oregon with open air drug use? Like, right. You know, oh, let's legalize it all, and then, you know, it'll just stop. Like, nah, fool. Now, how this works.
Shout out to John Harold from Badlands Media for gifting 10 subs to the channel.
Thank you so much.
AJC3 gifted 5 subs, and Tattoo Teacher also gifted 5 subs. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. All right. So, speaking of, you know, people sitting in prisons unjustly. On Monday, we learned that Tina Peters' federal bond was denied with prejudice. So we covered here on Colorado Free Press and everywhere, we covered the federal appeal. Tina Peters' legal team originally came with 3 items that they were requesting appeal, the federal courts to intervene on appeal. And the judge broke that, Judge Farhalik, out of the Colorado U.S. District for U.S. Court for the District of Colorado, I think is how you say it. Blanking on it. The court broke it into 5 items and then said this is a mixed petition. Now, a mixed petition has to be rejected, but the court gave them the opportunity to retain one of the claims, the First Amendment claim. And then there's been, months of kind of briefing and hearings on this issue of whether or not Tina Peters is being held out of fear of what she might say. That is what the appellate court said. That is what the district court, the trial court, said about why she's so dangerous. He said something to the effect of, right, prison is where we put people who are dangerous or who are a danger to all of us, whether that is by the sword, the pen, or the word of mouth, which is a wholy fucking unconstitutional thing.
Does she get visitation?
Well, she does, but it's like really tightly controlled. I've been trying to get in to see her. I think I've made some headway in that, in at least to get a call from her. I think I'm working towards that. If I do get a call from her, then I'm going to ask her to help, because it's up to her who's on the list. It's a very limited amount of people.
The reason I ask that is because it's kind of like, if she gets visitation, then the fear of what she's going to say is really not a problem, because she can relay her message to somebody through somebody else. You see what I'm saying? But if her visitation is tight like that, then now that definitely makes sense.
It's very tight. Communications with Tina Peters very tightly gatekept.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
She has an attorney. So couldn't she relay her message through her attorney to give to somebody else on the outside?
Yeah. I mean, I tried going through her attorneys. That was my first stop. It was John Case specifically, and he was unable to help. I don't really know how that works. And I talked to somebody who was visiting her. They gave me, I kind of had like a wild goose chase kind of thing. Then I called the prison, talked to the prison. They said, you have to be put. And this was all as media, right? To go in as media. And I have Colorado media credentials. They said, well, we don't really allow media access to inmates. You have to go. She has to put you on her list, and you can talk to her on the phone. But I know that people are visiting her in person, and that's a different list that she has. But both of those lists, the call list and the visitation list, are apparently held by Tina Peters. She is the authorities to put the people on the list that she wants. But I'm going to keep working on it.
At least that's what they're telling you.
Right.
Yeah, that's what my experience of trying to navigate this and get in to see her has been. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the federal court said in his order, and you can read the entire order at coloradofreepress.com, without question, Ms. Peters raises important constitutional questions concerning whether the trial court improperly punished her more severely because of her protected First Amendment speech. But because this question remains pending before Colorado courts, this court must abstain from answering that question until after the Colorado courts have decided the issue. Accordingly, based on the Younger abstention doctrine, her application must be dismissed without prejudice. And that was the decision. Now, in that order, the long form of the order, he goes through and talks about how into detail, but the specific question is still pending in the Colorado courts. And according to Supreme Court precedent in Younger, if it's still pending, unless one of the three exceptions applies, then the court has to abstain. They cannot intervene. This is a federal court. Yep. On it. This is the federal court intervening in state court proceedings. And the Supreme Court has governed that the Younger abstention doctrine says if the three conditions of Younger are met, then the federal court has to abstain from intervening unless one of the three exceptions to Younger exists. Now, the court says that Tina Peters never briefed on the exceptions, that her briefing on Younger was specifically related to the three conditions being met, saying that they weren't met, so that the court didn't have to abstain and they could intervene. The court said you could read her petition to the extent that you could read her petition as arguing the weaponized government kind of cruel and unusual things that are happening meets one of the exceptions to Younger. She didn't brief that. That's what the court says. I don't know. I haven't read all of the back and forth briefings on Younger over the past several months, but that is what the court claims, the federal court claims, but acknowledges that her First Amendment claims, may have some merit. It's just the timeliness, the jurisdictional question. He is barred from intervening. So,
as a judge.
the federal district court is barred from intervening.
Is this 10th district?
10th circuit, yeah.
10th, okay. The he, him thing concerns me.
Oh, that's the next part. We're gonna, okay. This is who had this on your bingo card?
Jesus.
America uses they, them pronouns, so Trump can pardon Tina Peters. Now, this is the letter that Peter Ticton said, and on Steve Bannon, he said that Stephanie Lambert wrote this letter, or they collaborated on it. It's his name on it, but he gave her kind of all of the credit for the letter and ostensibly the strategy behind the letter. I don't know about that for sure, but he says in this letter, and in the same article, the whole letter is linked so people can read the whole thing. It's 9 pages. And the first parts of this letter go through the cruel and unusual treatment at the prisons, that she's been attacked, that she's been thrown in solitary. She's not getting the medical treatment that she needs. All manner of things that could be the substance of the DOJ investigation, or at least part of the substance of the DOJ investigation that was just announced into the prisons. But then towards the end of this, he gets into this pronoun argument, which is, you as the president of the United States have the power to grant a pardon pursuant to Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 1 of the Constitution of the United States, which states in part, he shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except, it says United Stales, which this is a copy paste, so it's in the letter. Except in cases of impeachment. Yeah. The reason that many pundits opine, actually, you know what, as I'm thinking about this, I used optical scanning because the thing is a PDF, not, you know, it's a from a PDF or a picture of a letter. So that actually might have been the OCR, not an issue in the letter. The reason that many pundits opine that you have only the power to grant pardons for federal offenses is that we all understand the United States to be the federal government of our country. We have one country and it is called the United States. When we consider the United States, its personal pronoun is it, which exemplifies that it is one nation. Therefore, we read offenses against the United States to mean offenses against the federal government. However, from the time of its inception until after the Civil War, when one considered the United States, it was thought of as the various countries or states which had become united. Hence, when its pronoun was used, it was always they, them, or their. For instance, Article 3, Section 3, Paragraph 3 of the Constitution states, treason of the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving aid and comfort. The understanding of these united countries was that our country was a conglomerate of separate countries, which had been united for certain common purposes and protections. That understanding is evidenced toward the end of the Civil War in the 13th Amendment. It states, Section 1, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude shall exist in the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. In that day and age, they were speaking of the United Countries, and the president was given the right to pardon all offenses. Moreover, it does not make sense that they intended to give the individual states the power to circumvent the president's power to pardon. And I think that this statement is true if we're talking about the Reconstruction amendments and the kind of the mindset of the framers who were attempting to rebuild after the Civil War. They were very much in favor of a strong central government and the president having those kinds of powers, right? Abraham Lincoln appointed the legislatures in the southern states, so they were on board with that. But when you think about originalism and where the framers of the Constitution, the original Constitution, where their heads were, I don't see how they would have thought that the president of the United States could circumvent the governor back in the 18th century American Constitution.
Sure. There's that argument also based upon the fact that they left the monarchy.
Yeah.
So as not to give that level of power to one. However, I am questioning were all of the crimes, all of the individuals who were pardoned by Otto Penn back in 2024, were they all, every single one of them, were they all federal crimes?
Yes.
All of them.
This has never been done before.
But were
it got sort of close. It got sort of close in the wake of the Civil War, where there was a whole bunch of pardons for the insurrectionists of the South. But it still
did
not apply
to Southern
states.
I'm talking about the Otto Penn.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about Joe Biden.
But I don't, but no, they didn't touch state level crimes as far as I'm aware. Hunter Biden
It was mostly federal.
Yeah, it was all federal.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, and it wasn't all pardons.
Yeah, this has never been done before, what they're asking. And that's part of the, you know, part of, actually, I have a clip. Well, actually, I'll get to that clip a little bit later. But yeah, so this is asking, and this is going to get into the thread that we're going to go through. This is asking the president to do something extraordinary that is against the precedent that goes back to the founding of our country and the original framing of the Constitution, and saying, well, our argument is airtight. It's airtight. He can totally do it. It is. This has never been done before.
Okay.
And maybe he can. I love the constitutional question of it. I think it's hilarious. I think this could here's the problem. Is if you have this Supreme Court look at this constitutional question, I think they're going to end up in a place closer to the original Constitution than the Reconstruction Constitution. That's this specific, composition of the. Yeah. And that I think helps America, but it doesn't help Tina Peters, because the ruling there is the federal government doesn't have the authority to do this. And, you know, President Trump's inauguration speech is what truly matters is not which party controls our government, but whether our government is controlled by the people and that we're taking power away from Washington, D.C. and giving it back to the people.
Sure.
That includes the structures in the states, in my opinion. It would have to if we're talking about the Constitution. And so, you know, taking this specific constitutional issue to the Supreme Court may help the transformation program to restore America to something resembling its founding, but that doesn't help Tina Peters, because I think she's relying on a big federal government argument for President Trump to do this. I don't know. I'm happy to be wrong about this. I'm not an attorney, certainly not a constitutional attorney. But it's interesting. And I think the constitutional question is interesting. I don't think he's going to do it. And I think that what they've done, and this is where I'll play that clip, I think that what they've done is set this up in such a way that it looks like President Trump is the reason that Tina Peters is, you know, going to be still in prison at Christmas. It's going to be all President Trump's fault because he didn't pardon her. But, you know, in reality, he doesn't have the authority.
But this would be coming from the same people who have screamed when I've asked before I researched it a lot more. Well, you know, this is a state charge, so he can't pardon her. He can't pardon her. So the same people who have been screaming that for a year are the same ones who would now blame him for not releasing her. But is there an argument that she could be instrumental? Because what's also different is the founders did not anticipate electronic voting and absentee ballots.
That is a fact.
And it's been abused. And because who was this woman I listened to? She's very knowledgeable. She talked about the overpresence of absentee ballots is how they were able to really seal the deal with this. She's in Michigan, and she made reference to the TCF. Remember the big TCF arena when they were boarding up the windows and hiding their crimes? But the founders did not anticipate all of this fraud. The rules were established, but it's just gone so far beyond what they could have ever imagined. And Tina Peters and her testimony holds the key to save the Republic.
Damn.
She's keeping us in suspense.
Do we abide by? Do we continue? Because this hangs in the balance, and of course, it has to come back to the state of Colorado and Mesa County. When you think of the entire corrupt temple being brought down, it's
a big deal.
That was cute. Thank you. I saw
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Hello, Jackie.
But do you wait? This is heavy weight. Do you abide by post-Reconstruction era constitutional law, or do you save the Republic? Because
well, and which America? Because in the wake of the Civil War, we became much more of a heavy central government, sure, major democracy than we were before the Civil War. If President Trump's mandate, put your fucking hand down, dude. I'll call on you in a second. If President Trump's mandate is given power back to the people, then you know that is closer to the original Constitution than it is for Reconstruction. Darren, what would you like to say?
Well, I have a question. So let's just say, for instance, you know, that they have this bill in circulation in Congress about voter ID, paper ballots, you know, right. Would that apply to state elections as well?
So if the ballot at the state, so probably, but because of state compliance, not by mandate. So what the states can do is split out federal elections and hold federal elections the way that the federal government says they have to, and hold their state elections the way that they want to. We see this in, like, you know, New York trying to let illegals vote, right? Well, that can't be on a federal thing that would violate federal law. So they could split them out to, in the interest of efficiency, they probably would not. They would probably comply. And in that case, you would change the behavior. You can also tie funding to these things, which is one of the things that I've argued is one of the great levers that President Trump does have to help Tina Peters is make the funding contingent upon certain funding where there's discretionary funding, make it dependent on election integrity. Measures,
he's putting a vice grip on Illinois. Mm-hmm. Chicago is going through hell right now. You saw Brandon Johnson crying, Karen?
No.
You didn't see
find that clip. I want to see. I haven't seen that, Darren. Find that clip. So I mentioned that I feel like this is shifting. We're blame shifting the responsibility for Tina Peters being in prison at Christmas from, you know, where it rightfully belongs, I think, in the state of Colorado, but, you know, Polis and maybe a little bit the former DOJ. There's a lot of record. There should be a record there that the Trump DOJ has that predates, you know, going back to the Merrick Garland DOJ. That should be very helpful. But the responsibility, this clip really made me lose my shit. I'm not gonna lie about it. It was this feels like a setup to me.
Oh my goodness. And we'll put it all out. Just real quickly, what's the time frame of this? Do you think a pardon will actually be coming for Tina before the holidays, sir?
I'm hoping yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, President Trump, you know, I don't know anybody who I respect more whose intellect I respect more. He not only gives things consideration, but he considers the timing of things as well. I'm hoping that I get the pardon, you know, at before Christmas. Yes. We've given him the form that we think would be the most appropriate. Of course, his legal team may want to change it, but in any event, he's got it. As soon as we have it, we will be flying out to Colorado and hand delivering it, and basically requiring that she be released.
So if Tina Peters isn't out by Christmas, it's President Trump's fault now?
Anybody saying that is retarded.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
After all this time, why is she in this first damn place?
Just do this extrajudicial thing and it'll be fine, President Trump. Just operate outside your statutory authority. Just go beyond the limits of the Constitution just this once. It's super important. You can do it. This is the same. This is the same thing that we heard in 2020. You just declare martial law, President Trump, declare martial law and, you know, seize all of the machines in the states and go overreach your authority. You know, your federal authority into the states, violate the states' rights. That's what was on the table, as I remember it, in 2020.
That was
what they were asking him to do. We're hearing this with Venezuela right now. We just need to go regime change. We got to make sure that Maria Corina Machado gets into Venezuela. Just, you know, go engage in this regime change, President Trump. You really need to. Just do it.
Yeah, I mean,
Victoria Nuland. She's been doing it for years.
There's 300 billion barrels of oil. Why the heck not? We do it all the time. It's nothing new.
Yeah, there is a pattern. There's a pattern of a certain group of people asking President Trump to operate outside, to you know, become the thing the left says he is, to become the dictator, to operate outside of the bounds of the Constitution. And he repeatedly does not do it. And I think that's notable. I think that's telling. And maybe it's because everybody in the cabinet is bad, and you know, old Trump got hoodwinked again. He hired the wrong people and got hoodwinked again. Or maybe the people that are actually that are asking the president to constantly act outside of his authorities, maybe that's got different motives. What do you guys think?
Yeah. Well, we're
honestly, I'll
put a pin in that. We're going to get the white liberals out on Wadsworth again saying no kings. I'm really over it. Like,
I have a prediction. After about maybe February, you're not going to see these people go find something else better to do.
Why do you think that? Because they have their oxygen tanks out here, man.
You got to think. but it's like five of them. Like, remember the No Kings? Like, the first No Kings thing was like...
No, it's more than five here. It might be five where you're at in South Florida.
There's a lot of them here.
Yeah, we got more than five.
There's a lot more than five. There's a lot more. They leave assisted living and walk down the street with their damn oxygen tanks. I wish I was making it up. I know, because I blow the horn and scare the shit out of them. Just...
you are evil.
I don't care.
Now, Karen honks the horn. Next thing you know, they press a life alert.
They are, though.
I don't care.
This episode of the Colorado Show is brought to you by Life Alert.
Not actually. That's false advertising. It's not actually.
It's hilarious.
It's good. Yeah, right. It's not just the boomer ones here. We have a lot. We have young people that, you know, and a lot of that's Palestine, but they tie it back. You know, they're all on the, they'll show up for whatever the top three causes are.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what you think about that, Darren?
All right. So here's my thoughts on that. I think that it's ridiculous, but Miami's pretty purple, right? So if, like, people don't understand, that's just Miami. That's not Miami-Dade County, right? So you have Miami, you got Hialeah, you got Doral, Homestead. There's a bunch of cities in Miami-Dade County. Miami is just a small part. So, well, everybody calls Miami, like, people be like, oh, I'm in Miami, but you're really in like Brickell, you're in like Doral, you know what I mean? you're in Sweetwater, so you know that's it. Miami's always been purple. I'm not surprised, but I will tell you this:
is she gonna have a big impact, or is she?
Heck no! The minute she starts talking that socialist progressive shit, man, them Cubans gonna run her up out of here. That's not gonna work. Man, look, let me tell you something. Go to a Cuban neighborhood in Miami. And even fix your face to say that you're gonna give away some free shit. It's over. I remember one guy, they ran out of there. I forgot his name. They had a whole army running after this guy down the street.
What?
Yeah,
so they're back, like, now with the socialism.
Heck no. They don't play that. And then you gotta think too, DeSantis has put a grip on this state so hard, like. Hey, if you like, okay, so where I'm at, it's mostly Democrat, right? This is a Democrat. Mm-hmm. It's a blue county. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing about it is, the minute they even like thought about getting soft on crime, DeSantis made a phone call like, hold up, no, we're not doing that. So he's got such a grip on the state, like.
Okay.
Yeah, there's still a lot of blue dog old school Democrats here.
Okay. You know.
Now there was a prosecutor in Orlando that he, I think, suspended for a long time or something like that, because she let some guy out who had already committed a murder. She was she got real lenient, And then she let him out, and then he got into a shootout with cops.
Yeah.
So DeSantis was like, nah, Heffa, you gotta go.
Oh, he dismissed her.
Oh yeah, I think she's gone. And she's Soros. He's gotten rid of a lot of Soros influence here. That was the aim. Huh?
But one was just elected?
No. I don't know.
She's just non-Soros Democrat.
I don't know about her. I'm talking about the I'm talking about the prosecutor in Orlando that
DeSantis. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've gotten off track. This is the Colorado show, and we're talking about Florida.
We do that all the time.
I know, we do it all the time. But we've about 18 minutes left.
See, this is the thing. I have a beef with you because you want to act like I'm not.
Anyway, we're gonna.
Oh yeah, I can do that too.
I know you can take yourself out. Get your ass back in here.
Come back here, Aaron.
Yeah. I don't have
to take this. I exfoliate. I don't need this. Yeah.
You're late for your facial appointment,
right? I get facials and exfoliate.
Brought to you by Vaseline.
I love that so much.
Think, shit, too pretty for this shit.
I'm too sexy for this.
All right, so we're gonna shift
for the show.
We're gonna shift. As I mentioned, you know, the video that we just watched with Peter Tichtin, in that same interview, he said that Stephanie Lampert wrote the letter that he wrote to President Trump. Stephanie Lampert is well known for being one of Patrick Byrne's attorneys. Patrick Byrne just recently, I think this part, yeah, here we go, came out, this is yesterday's interview, I believe, and said this. I have a couple clips here to play.
We have now broken Venezuelan airspace with two F-18s. Let's get this show on the road. The problem is, and because I'm mad, you know, I've refrained all I could.
Hold on. Let me read it. Yeah, okay, he's moving his hand. He got DeSantis hands. No, not DeSantis. Gavin Newsom hands. Yeah, he's got it. Like, yeah. So, like, you know.
Oh, no.
You know, the Wonder Bread. And, like, come on, man. Get it together.
All right. Listen, this is very important, Darren.
All right. I've explored every other avenue I could. But we're facing an insurrection. We have this going on. I have no choice. First thing to tell you is, you know how I've explained all these years? I've had this weird relationship with the government. And it was, like, intellectual. And my bright red line was the CIA. And I had nothing to do with them. That's all a lie. I'm CIA. I was CIA for years. After 9/11, I did have that academic relationship with the government for years. After 9/11, I got pulled up into the CIA. I worked for them. And here's the key point.
It's a terrible cut. Terrible cut on that video. Sorry about that. The whole interview is like 28 minutes long. It's worth listening to. But he has now admitted that he is CIA. Now, in the... See if I can pull this image.
Seems like he's on something.
Yeah. In his, that was my response too. He seems like a spinning out addict in some of these interviews. But in his July 2023 Capital Times Magazine article, Capital Times Magazine is a magazine put out, as I understand it, by the General Flynn Organization. And the very first one that they ever put out was a Patrick Byrne on the cover of it. And the article was titled DHS's Number One Extremist Comes Clean. So he was coming clean. Now, what he says in this interview, I was kind of fibbing a little bit in that, and I'll play another clip from that in a second. But so I'll come back to this in a second. But here he says, I am not a spy. I've never worked for the CIA, but it has been one of the honors of my life that from time to time, on rare occasion, there have been other parts of the government who knew they could call on me to make a small contribution, generally rather than an academic contribution to some effort of theirs, often having to do with peace. So the story that we were told in this article is that in 2006, remember what he just said, he was pulled into the CIA after 9/11. In 2006, what we've been told prior, 300 million Americans elected a Senate. And that Senate, a super secret committee of the Senate that involves, it's of the judiciary, but involves the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee was there also. that Senate said, we have a real problem with corruption. This is coming after the, you know, the Wall Street stuff. And Patrick Byrne had kind of called some of the Wall Street stuff. 2006, the 300 million Americans elected a Senate. That Senate came to me and said, Patrick, you are traveling the world. You're meeting with, you know, heads of state and business leaders in your capacity as, you know, Overstock CEO, and some of the relationships you have. He mentions in the other clip we're going to play his rabbi, and his rabbi in this article, his rabbi is Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett was his mentor. He was a friend of his father's, and he came up with him and he called him his rabbi. So when he's referring to his rabbi, I assume he means Warren Buffett, because that's the only he says also in this article that he majored in Catholic and minored in Jew. He was an altar boy, a Catholic altar boy.
What?
I have no idea how much of this is true, because he's now admitted that he is in the CIA and that he was fibbing in this storytelling. We don't know what was a lie and what was truth. We haven't gotten that level of detail.
I mean, cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Facts. All right. So we have this. No, not that one.
He does have that late 90s Gary Busey look.
Right? When a lie becomes the truth. Hey, hey, hey. I couldn't resist.
Yes.
Oh my God.
All right.
Okay. Billie Jean is your mother.
All right, listen.
Oh, man.
Two bombshells right now. But can't ignore the third. You just told us that you are CIA, sir. So what? How would you describe your role with the CIA, which you haven't revealed before?
Well, again, I was telling the truth when I said they frequently was reminded that you have a really non-standard relationship. You have it became kind of my mother relationship. I had lots of relations across the government, and but eventually I went from there to, by 2010, 2011, Obama became something called a tier one intelligence asset. And then in 20.
So first under Brennan, 2006, or after post 9/11, brought into CIA under Brennan. And then he talks about under 2011, brought in under Obama. So under the both Bush and Obama administrations.
2010, 2011, Obama elevated me to national intelligence asset. I was told I was going to be the ace in the hole for all kinds of, you know, for the real tough situations. From 2010, 20, that was after working for Brennan for 4 or 5 years. And then I continued doing all that stuff through 2016. And all this crazy stuff happened that I've told you about, where we set up the Russian hoax. That's why, and I've talked around it. But I've told these stories about how I got drawn into setting up the Russian hoax and the Hillary this and that. There's a little bit of fibbing there. I didn't want to explain the whole truth. I was doing that. I didn't just stumble into it.
But I'm telling the whole truth now. Right now, I'm telling the whole truth.
I was their go-to asset. I was the national intelligence asset.
First,
I got with Brennan in 06. And then 2011, I got moved into the White House. That's where I got mixed up in the Russian collusion and the Hillary stuff.
And there's actually a docuseries that General Michael Flynn produced about your life story. And this will make more sense now that you've shared this information. If you go back and watch that docuseries, why are you sharing this information now, Patrick? As we're looking at Venezuela, we're talking about our rigged elections. It seems to me that you feel that this is an important part of you that you need to let the people know. Why?
I've danced around long enough and it's not working.
Yeah, it is. Especially with the drugs you're taking.
Hold the fuck up. I've danced around. Well, I didn't consider DHS number one extremist comes clean in 99 pages of stories about statecraft, and I was working for the government and the Senate told me to do this, and 300 million Americans elected a Senate, and that Senate selected me to, you know, solve the corruption problem we had. That wasn't dancing around. There's nothing dancing around about that. That was a very specific story that we're now being told is a lie. And oh, by the way, I'm CIA, but I'm totally telling you the truth. We're going to get into what his assertions are right now and why we super have to believe him. Spoiler alert, it's that he's accusing the cabinet of sex crimes.
Hold up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's finish this.
Spent the first Trump term trying to dance around within my constraints. Buffett said, Patrick, when I went to see him, it was like my rabbi. He said, Patrick, just go on television and tell everything. And I just said I couldn't do that. But I went and told enough, trying to shape. And I've had enough. We're having an insurrection. We have an insurrection going on. People calling, you know, these people calling, you know, if, and don't you hate how that they say, well, we're not saying disobey Trump. We're just saying that if he gives you illegal orders, which is theoretically, then it's time for you to disobey Trump.
This part's insane.
So I want to tell people in the military who I know watch your show that theoretically, if you have officers, generals or colonels who try to get you to take part in a color revolution, please kill them for us citizens. Just shoot them in the face. We'll appreciate it. Theoretically.
Whoa.
Right?
Hold on. Damn.
Now, I get what he's doing is saying like the seditious six, right? He's using the same language as the seditious six and theoretically, you know, et cetera. That's kind of crazy. I want to just, you know, back up my prior assertion here so folks can see. Hold for processing.
Darren, what was you coming up with? See, you forgot.
Now go home and smoke some more crack.
Somewhere in those years, Burns said he and Buffett started to use the term rabbi to describe their relationship because it resembled the young relationship a young Jewish boy would have with his own rabbi. It was absurdly generous of Mr. Buffett. Looking back, says Burns, I was 13, maybe 14 when it started. I still remember verbatim parables Buffett told me. My life's direction was changed by those afternoons with him. So when he says my rabbi, it's my understanding that he's talking about Warren Buffett.
The Warren Buffett was your rabbi?
Yeah, Warren Buffett was a friend of his father's. Patrick Burns' father, they ended up in a business relationship together, and that's how the family became wealthy. And then Warren Buffett took an interest in young Patrick and kind of mentored him up until eventually he joined the CIA, apparently. So,
because that's how that always happens.
Typical timeline, right?
Yeah.
Well, I drank a Russian coffee at Dazbog, so there's that.
I've
never been there before. Find that clip. Y'all talk amongst yourselves while I listen.
The Brandon Johnson clip is in the private chat.
Oh, right on. You know you can share stuff. You don't have to make me do it.
I mean, you're the pilot of this thing.
Well,
all right, hold up.
I need to see him crying, but then we got to go back to Patrick.
This is 7 minutes long. You have a timestamp for where he cried. Does he cry for 7 minutes?
No.
Tell me the timestamp.
I'll find it. All right.
I want to find the
jackass.
That cocaine clip is hilarious, and I don't know why. It used to be in here on our soundboard, and it's not anymore, which makes me mad. Mad about it for the record. I'm pissed for the record. Did you find
it? Okay, he starts crying in the beginning. Show. It's in the beginning.
All right.
Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson shedding some crocodile tears today after his beloved corporate head tax proposal got nixed from the city council's alternative budget proposal.
There are lines of Chicagoans right now of people who do not have food, you guys. And if you've never gone hungry, you wouldn't know why I have that urgency. If you've never opened up your refrigerator, there's nothing in it.
Yes, it let it
that's
run.
That's not how you say that word.
I'm from Chicago, is how he says it. It's fine.
Corporations are making a killing right now, and we have elders that are more interested in defending these big corporations than families like mine who went without food and electricity and could not afford rent and mortgage.
And I'm still hungry.
Get me something I can work with.
Yo, look, all right, that's it. So my thing is this, let me tell you something. I'm gonna tell you when I realized a lot of these talking points are bullshit. When I looked at the average weight of a SNAP recipient,
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I was like, I ain't buying it no more, dog. Like,
yeah. Like, they don't look hungry.
Yeah, y'all don't look hungry at all. At all. Y'all don't even look in the zip code of hungry. So I don't want to hear none of that. None of it, bro. Like, I used to have a special place deep down in this black hole heart of mine for the hungry. I don't believe y'all. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I don't. Agreed. Sorry.
Or charities. I don't believe in charities.
I don't believe in charities. Yeah. After I saw what happened to Haiti and right. with the Clinton. What? You go down to little Haiti and ask them. What they can't stand it. They can't stand charities. You come out there, I have a foundation. Shut up.
I don't blame them. They can do that if they would like.
I want you to use that voice. Wait a second. Let me tell you about my foundation.
Let me tell you about it. Shut the fuck up. Right.
Get it out of my country.
Yeah, you're not playing.
Mm-hmm. Can't find that video. I'm so mad.
Go mention Hillary Clinton. Go to little Haiti and mention Hillary Clinton. They were wired. Mm-hmm,
right? Yo. You'll get run out of there. Let me introduce you to my friend Barbecue. Yeah,
you'll catch the machete.
Mm-hmm. They love their machetes now.
They love them. They love them.
Woo!
Machete.
Yeah. Well, so while she's finding that, let's just refresh the absolution that Colorado is the, as Ash told me years ago, fraud test kitchen.
Shout out Holly at Altitude. That's her term.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Holly. What's up, girl? But I heard it from you. So, Holly, I miss you. Fraud test kitchen, this place, I am sure that there is a part of these people that is a little bit nervous. They usually get away with their crimes, but there's so much of the onion being peeled back now on the national level. And now with this Patrick Byrne thing coming out, I think it's just going to continue to get worse. Like Minnesota, there's just going to be this fraud uncovers this fraud and that fraud uncovers that fraud. And it's just going to snowball. There's not going to be any choice. The people are going to start to demand that these criminals are removed from office. There's no other way. They've been stealing our money. They've been stealing our elections. They want to talk about how they protect the black vote. No, you don't. You gave my vote, Jenna Griswold, to an illegal alien. You don't care about the vote. You don't care. And now she wants to be AG to protect herself so she can actually pardon herself from any wrongdoing or any crime, because that's
she can dismiss her own complaints now. Good, she won't need to rely on Wyther to dismiss her complaints. She can dismiss them herself. All right, I found a cut of it on Instagram. Yeah. I'm gonna have to pull this whole thing back down, but
I know every island. Like a dude in the night. I know them all. He'll be gone. I'm clapping. I'm praising. I feel like I just snorted cocaine or something. I'm so excited. And I never did that before. For the record. But I'm clapping my head.
I feel like when we do a new intro for the song, that should be our background song.
How do we get him on the show?
We need to get him on the show.
We need to book homie.
I can't stand him. That's Furtick. I don't like him. I think he's like a womanizer. I don't like him. What's his name?
You actually know who that person is? That is?
Yeah, that's, is it John Furtick? His last name's Furtick.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like him. I've never watched him.
Hold on. Time out.
Steven Furtick.
I got some questions here. How did you know who that is? And how did you find it?
Everything.
I know these ratchet pastors, honey. I've been watching pastors for years. That's a heretic. That's
an authority on ratchet pastors.
I know ratchet pastors. I know.
She got a map of them by state.
Honey, right? I got a map of these.
All right, well, criminals. For the record, we got to get out of here because we're out of time. So everybody, please hit the like button wherever you're watching us. It helps us out quite a bit. We will be back here next Wednesday at noon Mountain Time for your midweek lunch break. And if you want more information on kind of what's what's all going on with the CIA, Patrick Byrne. We didn't have time to go through the whole thread, but it's on my Twitter. It's, I think, the last post I made on Twitter. So
very interesting. Can
check it out.
Right.
I'll add it to the highlights as well, so it stays right. Kind of there at the top. But folks can check that out. I don't know what the answers to the questions are, but I think the questions are important. And now that we have confirmation that some of the key players were at a minimum funded by a CIA, a top CIA intelligence operative guy, right? I think we should be able to get some of those questions answered.
I might have to go watch that.
Oh, really?
That should be interesting.
Very much. Oh, yeah. Thanks
so,
for
so,
that.
So what are you telling me? You're in the CIA. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, well, you know,
that's what you're telling the audience.
You want to debunk narratives about the CIA. The guy you go to is Alex Jones.
Alex Jones.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have Nick Fuentes up here, and then the guy from the CIA.
All right, we're out of here, you guys. Everybody, hit the like button. We'll see you next week. Cheers.